Welcome to the Rent Estate Podcast, a conversation on how you can achieve retirement security, financial freedom, and the new American dream through rental property investments. And here's your host, Kevin Ortner, CEO of Renter's Warehouse.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is episode number 4 of the Rent Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Ortner, CEO of Renter's Warehouse. Thanks for being here. As always, on the Rent Estate Podcast, we're talking about gaining financial freedom, retirement security, financial independence using single-family real estate investments. And we're doing interviews with successful real estate investors or expert property managers, true experts in the field, with the goal of being able to mine some of the gold out from their brain and have some takeaways, whether you're a new investor or a seasoned investor alike. For those tuning in for the first time and might not know Renter's Warehouse or myself, I've been investing in real estate for over 18 years personally, and I've been helping others do the same for over a decade now. Renter's Warehouse really exists to be a guide for those who are seeking financial independence, financial freedom, retirement security, and we believe that all investors deserve a partner who can help people execute on that investment strategy with ease and cut through some of the confusion and complexity that can come with this type of investment. It's really with that mindset that we've created a process that's helped over 50,000 real estate investors across the country. And we now manage over 23,000 homes, making us the largest real estate investment company in America. So the goal of the podcast really is to share success stories with some of our real estate investors, share tips and tricks with some of our experts that work here in Renter's Warehouse or work outside of Renter's Warehouse in the field of real estate management and real estate investing, so that you as an investor can avoid pitfalls that we've all already experienced. And hopefully we can help you avoid those and avoid the lost time and the heartache and the headache and really actually achieve that financial freedom and that time freedom that can come with passive income so you can do more of what you love with the people you love. So today I have Brock Thompson on the show. We're going to talk all things maintenance and renovation related to real estate investors and landlords. Brock has been with Renter's Warehouse, 6 months?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Just a little over 6 months.
All right, a little over 6 months. So that's great. He's got a great background before he got into Renter's Warehouse, just around maintenance and vendor relationships and all that kind of stuff. So excited to hear about that. And Brock, I mean, this is such a huge topic, given that maintenance is really the number one expense that landlords face next to maybe a mortgage payment or property taxes or something like that. But it's really often the most controllable expense as well for landlords. So I'm really excited to dive into this topic with you a little bit and share some of the, you know, your tips and tricks around maintenance and some of the things you've learned with our investors or our folks watching here. But before we do that, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, sure. As you said, I've been with Renter's Warehouse for a little over 6 months. I'm new to property management. Prior to that, I worked mostly in retail with big box. So the last 4 years prior to coming here, I focused on vendor management for Lowe's, mainly around repairs and installations. So that's where I got most of my experience working with the vendor network. Prior to that, just working in the stores through different management positions.
That's awesome. Yeah, your vendor background, I was really excited to have you join us. Is that such a big piece of maintenance and R&M for properties, right? Is selecting the right vendors, having the right vendors, et cetera. And so maybe we start there, which is, let's talk a little bit about vendors and how landlords who are looking to manage the homes themselves already have properties and are doing this. What are your tips to them on how to vet a potential vendor, maybe how to find good vendors, but also like what are the things people should be looking at when they're vetting a maintenance vendor?
Sure. Well, I think the first step is in your search, you know, just a few things. I think something often missed, ask your neighbors. If you belong to social media groups in your neighborhood, those are often great resources. Mm-hmm. I see in my neighborhood all the time postings, hey guys, I had my AC go out. Anybody have a good resource for me?
Right.
So past experience from your neighbors or social media is great. I think just a quick internet search as well to look for ratings and reviews. You certainly will get bad reviews on almost everyone, but you can kind of see how people line up by doing that research. So I think a combination of those two things will get you a good start, list.
Yeah.
I think the next piece is really vetting them, which is the most important thing. So you've got a few people and you need to research A good resource is to start with is a state website, right? For us here in Minnesota, Department of Labor and Industry is where we go. The nice thing there is you can check on the registrations, licensing, qualifications, and more importantly, if they have any violations. So that's a good start. You could also go to the Better Business Bureau to see if there's any negative feedback on that company. And you can also find out how long they've been in business. So just to give you an idea of their experience. And I think the last thing is just really to have a conversation with them, right? Call those folks that you vetted, ask a lot of questions, and I think really go with your gut, right?
Right.
Sometimes if they're telling you something that sounds too good to be true, your gut tells you that might not be right.
Right.
I would go with that.
Right. Right. Right.
So.
What kind of questions are you asking? You know, you say ask a lot of good questions. What kind of questions might those be?
Okay. Their experience level. Mm-hmm. So again, how long have you been in business? I think what is your typical work? When you get the answer, I do everything, that's not a good answer.
Right, right.
You know, I would narrow that down. Well, that's good to know. What do you do every day? What is 80% of your jobs that you get, that you get calls on, that you're really proud of your work? I would ask for resources or references from them. If they give those up, that'd be great. Just really questions to get to know them. I think, how do you handle jobs? What will the length of this project look like? You know, kind of those type of things. How far out are you?
That makes sense. I think it got one of the best takeaways right there, I think, for people vetting maintenance vendors, because you get that so much when you're talking to people. Hey, what kind of work do you do? What can you handle for me? I'm a real estate investor. Oh, I can do it all. I can do everything. Great narrowing down quite like, what do you do most of the time, right? What do you do well? I know I've faced that with vendors I've used in the past personally, where they do a lot of different stuff and they do it all pretty well. But the more you work with them, you really start to see, okay, this is what they really do. And this is what they really do well. Everything else is maybe a little ancillary. And sometimes we might leverage them for that. Other times it's, okay, now we know we're going to use these guys for, you know, this stuff, and we'll hire someone else for the other pieces of it. I think referrals are super important. That was the first thing you put out, you know, when we talked about how to find a maintenance vendor. And referral, especially in today's social media world, it's pretty easy to get a referral, right? The same thing in my neighborhood. Someone's air conditioner went out recently, and it wasn't social media, and it wasn't, you know, Nextdoor or one of those apps for neighborhoods. It was actually just a group text. But, you know, to all the buddies in the neighborhood, hey, my AC's out. Like, who have you guys used in the past? Referrals are so powerful. I know even just last night I was looking at getting my daughter signed up for some ACT prep courses, right? Wow. Not maintenance related, but same thing. There's a million of them, from tutors to courses to online courses to, you know, whatever it is. And you're like, how are we going to know if any of these things are good? And, you know, some quick research online, social media questions, and a few text messages to people I know have had daughters older than mine. Who'd you guys use, right? And 20 minutes later after that, we were signed up because, like, okay, great. Someone had a good experience with this person, and then we're going to sign up. And I think the same thing goes for finding those maintenance vendors. What are the most important vendors for a landlord, do you think, to have on their auto dial, right? The quick call. When I do a lot of speaking on this topic, or I do a lot of other people's podcasts and we talk, you know, they're always asking me what the big tips are for real estate investors to get started. And I talk a lot about building your team, right? And if you are going to do all these things yourself, that's great. Assemble the team, have the right realtor, perhaps the right property manager, if you can use a property manager. But if you're not, then you need to have the right technicians and vendors and contractors and all that kind of stuff on your team. And so putting that team together is important. Someone who deals with maintenance on single family homes every day, you know, what are the top two or three vendors that are must-haves for people to have, whether they need them or not, right? Because oftentimes we find ourselves searching for that vendor because the house is flooding rather than having the vendor we know we're going to call when the house is flooding, right? So anyway, what do you think are the top maybe two or three must-have vendors for people's auto dial?
Sure. Well, I think you touched on a really big topic, a big opportunity for investors is being prepared. So yeah, having those top vendors ready to go. Because oftentimes we get that call as landlords and we're like, oh geez, let me hop on the phone and the internet, right?
Right.
So I would say that, you know, an HVAC, so for furnace and air conditioners, that's a huge one.
Yeah.
really populates a lot of our calls here at Renter's Warehouse for issues, especially in the most demanding times, right?
Right.
When it's negative 20 or 90 some degrees.
Right.
That's when it spikes.
Right.
And that's not a good time to try and find one. So having one in pocket
right.
and speed dial is a good idea. So
right.
that'd be one. Another one would be plumbing. I'd say plumbing is a top category for issues in various ways. So I think it's especially if it's a situation where a pipe broke or there's a major leak
right.
That needs to be addressed. I'd say the third one is probably a good contractor that's helpful in dealing with emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the type of emergencies? Think of like storm damage.
Uh-huh.
So if you've got intrusion into your structure, so a hole
right.
in the roof, a tree fell.
Right.
Also someone who could handle water intrusion. So that mediation company that can come in and take care of a flooded basement. And I would say the third thing would be also someone who can secure the home. We often see, I shouldn't say often, right? But occasionally you see where the house can't be secured. So a broken
right.
window, a door that was broken either by emergency authorities or, God forbid, some crime.
Sure.
But those need to be taken care of quickly. So if you don't have those three resources in your pocket, you're going to struggle.
Right. So, yeah. So the things got to be taken care of quick. You want to have an auto dial, right? And go do the vendor vetting first. I think your comment around the HVAC people are so true. And you want to have a good relationship with them. Hopefully you can be on their VIP list, right? Because you're right. When furnaces are going out in the upper Midwest in the winter, because it's 30 below, it turns out everyone's furnaces are going out at the same time. And so all those guys are really busy. And having someone pre-picked, pre-selected, pre-vetted on auto dial, hopefully a relationship with them, is going to move you up to the top of the list. And I think that's probably one of the, you know, benefits of working with a professional property manager. I know certainly someone like Renter's Warehouse, not to make it an infomercial here, but we have that type of relationship with those types of vendors, right? Where things are going out, they have crews dedicated to real estate agents and property managers that say, okay, here's our retail business crews. They're going to go out and they're going to fix these furnaces or these ACs, but we kind of have this other team on reserve for our VIP clients, people who send us a lot of jobs, spend a lot of money with us every year. We want to make sure we can take care of them. And oftentimes our tenants don't have to wait 2 days to get something fixed or whatever it might be, whatever the timeline might be, right? We're able to move up that list. And so I think having those people in pocket, to your point, that's a really, really good tip. What about preventative maintenance? What are, maybe three things landlords should think about doing before it breaks? And I think preventative maintenance is something that's oftentimes overlooked by real estate investors, people who own single family homes, simply because it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. We're trying to make money on our investment. But oftentimes that preventative stuff can actually really save us money in the long run. So what do you think the tips are around preventative maintenance?
Yeah, and that's another place where we as landlords, and I'm a landlord, often
yeah.
fail. We
yeah.
don't think about these things.
Right.
So you really should get those on your calendar so you don't forget. I think a big one we just talked about is your furnace and AC. You should have those serviced once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because first of all, they'll run better, right? You'll extend the life just because you're improving, the performance overall. It's not going to stress the system. And they'll also check for potential problems. If they see a problem, they can give you an indication of maybe when the unit might be failing. So you can plan and save for that, right? I think another one is winter preparation, like here in Minnesota and the rest of the cold climate states. If you're not preparing for that, like preparing the irrigation system and the outside spigots, some of those maintenance things that need to be done, or making sure your tenant is doing those, you could incur some costs from those. And I think the third piece that I think self-managed investors don't do, like for me being a single property owner,
yeah.
I manage my property, is really getting that inspected, right? Look at the property once a year. You got to take a look at the structure and do a walkthrough so you can get ahead of potential issues. Like if you saw rotting wood or mm-hmm. a slow leaking water heater, something that you need to prepare for.
Right. makes sense. So preventative maintenance, maybe one mistake that real estate investors make by forgetting about preventative maintenance, not getting it on the calendar, not doing what it is. What are the other big mistakes you see real estate investors and landlords making when it comes to repairs and maintenance?
I would say we talked about this already, right? Being prepared. You've got to be prepared. Have that list of vendors ready to go. Know how to respond. I think the third one is I see many, many landlords don't respond quickly to their tenants' request or repair and maintenance issues. And I think that's bad in a couple ways. One is retention, right? Tenant retention. We'd all love to have tenants that stay in the property for 5 or 10 years.
Right.
If you're slow to respond, even to small issues, I think it sends a message that you don't care, right? So if you're sincere, even if it's a small issue, at least respond and look into it and give them an idea. It'll be a while, right? I think the third one or the second one would be if you don't look into some of those small issues, they may seem small. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a slow leak with the water heater.
Right.
I've got another year.
Right.
That could lead to greater costs, right?
Right.
When that gets worse. A small problem with the AC not keeping up on the peak days, but it does well the rest of the year. I'll just wait.
Right.
Well, when the unit fails and it costs $4,000 or $5,000 to replace, you know, that's when it's too late. So I think for me, those two are big mistakes, is not being prepared and just really not responding quickly to repair maintenance issues.
Yeah, I think besides the cost, you mentioned it a little bit, right? It's one thing is to even talk about the cost associated with those mistakes, but it's also that tenant relationship and the perception that you don't really care about them, but almost worse is you don't really care about the property, because so why are they going to care about the property? Okay, the water heater's leaking a little in the basement. Apparently, it's not a big deal. Why is the tenant going to continue to maintain the home if you're not going to maintain the home, right? And so much of this, every time we do a podcast and we talk about these tips, so much of property management just go back to communication. Right? Communicate, and you said it, communicating with your tenant. Like, I got your request. I understand. Here's what I'm doing. Here's my next steps. You may not have an update for them, but maybe the update is you don't have an update, right? I got the call, super hot out, all the air conditioning techs are booked, working through a couple different people I know, hopefully have someone there in the next day or two, mon it, right? I hear you, you're important to me, I feel your pain, right? And have some empathy, because it may be frustrating for you because you're dealing with it, but it's extra frustrating for the person whose AC is out in their house. And unlike a homeowner, they're really not able to do anything about it, right? They can call you as the landlord and say, hey, my AC's broken. And I talk to landlords a lot, like, I can't believe that my tenants don't understand that it takes a couple days to get stuff fixed sometimes. And I think sometimes there is a misperception that things might be fixed in 4 hours, like there are in apartment buildings oftentimes, right? And it is a little bit different, but again, as a landlord, you need to set those expectations with people. Then to communicate with them, because the tenant in your home can't occupy their frustration with it by calling a bunch of different AC vendors and hearing back from them all that, sorry, we can't get there for a day and a half or 2 days. All they can do is call you, and then if they don't get a call back, that's just extra frustrating about it, right? So that communication is just so big, and I think really flows into every facet of property management, but especially maintenance when you're dealing with someone's home that they live in, and they don't want to deal with it either, right? Okay, let's talk about cost a little bit, right? When we introed this segment, we talked about maintenance being one of the maybe more controllable costs that landlords face. Can't do as much about taxes, probably can't change your mortgage as much. Sometimes you can, but doing preventative maintenance to keep costs down, having the right vendors to keep costs down, all those kind of things, there's a little bit of control here, and it is expensive. So how can a landlord get the best pricing for repairs? It's one thing to get a bunch of vendors lined up, but then how can they save money on the common repairs? And, you know, should they be getting multiple bids, or how does that work? And what's your suggestions to someone listening trying to save money on repairs and maintenance on their property?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd mention is significantly low pricing. Right, we talk about pricing.
Yeah.
Best pricing doesn't mean the lowest pricing. So
totally agree with that.
A big mistake that some of us have made in the past. So
it sounds like you're speaking from some experience.
Yeah. If you get a price that's shockingly low, typically a red flag could be because of quality, experience, timeliness, maybe lack of licensing or insurance. So those are things that you want to look out for. I would say a couple things on pricing. One is call around, right? Call people and call these vendors and ask for pricing. A lot of them have hourly rates. Typically, when I come to look at a toilet, it could be between this and that, something like that. I think it's important to differentiate between what is a trip charge and then what is their hourly rate. So right. You kind of know what you're going into. You touched on this before, the relationship piece with your vendors, right? Mm-hmm. If you work the relationship with your vendors, which is just staying in contact with them, building that relationship through your issues, you can negotiate, right? Especially if you're giving them business, if you have multiple properties, you can negotiate those prices. So I think that's with any of the vendors, always you can try to negotiate pricing.
Should always ask, right? The worst thing they can say is no. Oftentimes there's a bit of room. And I think going back to the relationship piece, and this is something I haven't really talked about in any public forum or podcast or much, but it just popped into my mind just now, and something that we try and do here, and I know personally I've done in the past, is if you want better pricing for your vendors, pay them quickly, right? It's the same money. So the $250 you pay the plumber for work that he did at your property yesterday or last week or whenever it was, it's the same $250 to you whether you pay him this week or 2 weeks from now. But the value of the money to the vendor and to that relationship, I think, is far more the sooner you pay, right? And you're not going to get good pricing terms if you're stretching your vendors out. You're like, I'm going to get around to paying them in 3 months, right? Or whatever it might be. And now some of our vendors at Renters Warehouse we work with, we set the expectations up front, because what we do for our clients is we might fix something today and we're going to pay that vendor out of next month's rent. And so there is a little bit more of a delay than maybe if you're doing it yourself, because it's all your bank account anyway, right? But we have those expectations with the vendors up front saying, hey, we're going to give you a lot of volume of work. We're going to send you a ton of business. Here's our expectations. Here's what we like to see on pricing. We drive pricing down for the greater good of our clients. And then we might say, hey, some work orders you might get paid in a week because it happened, you did it on the 25th of the month and we got it billed and rent came in on the 1st and we're going to cut you a check. Other ones might be a bummer because you might do it on the 3rd and we just sent rent to our homeowner and we're gonna keep that in the account till next month when rent comes in. And so it might be 4 or 5 weeks. But again, we go in with that expectation set, the communication there, and it's clear cut and everyone understands. But if you're an individual do-it-yourself landlord and you get an invoice, the sooner you pay that thing, again, same money, but the goodwill that comes from that, I think, is huge. And that's going to really allow you to drive down pricing. So a little rant that just popped in my head, but
I wanted to add a couple more points right around pricing. So another way to save is have a good handyman. Find a good handyman, right? A lot of the issues tenants calls on are minor issues. If you send a contractor, it's going to cost, right?
Right.
If you develop that relationship with a handyman, these are quick fixes. They can probably even estimate it over the phone. And if you've got somebody good and quick, again, you're reinforcing that relationship with your tenant and working on that retention with them.
Right.
The other piece would be, you mentioned something about getting bids, right?
Right.
That's really important on the larger projects, right? If you've got time, it's a non-emergency, absolutely. Call multiple vendors, get bids. The two biggest pieces I would point out is you need a contract, a written contract with a detailed scope of work.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have a contract that says fix the water heater or repair drywall.
Right.
But that doesn't tell me what the scope is.
Right.
It should say, for instance, on the drywall, cut out the bad drywall, replace new drywall, prime and paint.
Right.
To, finished quality. Right. So it's important to always have things written down so that you can hold the vendor accountable should you have to.
That is important in the bidding process, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Really understanding what the scope of each bid is, or estimate if you are getting multiple bids, because that happens all the time where and it's not nefarious most cases. People just they're bidding in a different way, or they understand the work order to be different than it is. And so I don't really think it's people trying to play tricks. They're just saying, yeah, I can do that job for you for $500. This other person said $900. You're like, oh, sweet, $500 deal. But the $500 bid actually didn't include the painting, right? Because you said, hey, replace the drywall. Where this guy said, well, obviously he wants it painted as well. He didn't tell me that, but I'm assuming he wanted it painted. So I put it in my bid. And so, yeah, diving into that detail scope is, I can see that being super important. All right, we got a few minutes left, a couple things to wrap up. I got kind of one last question that I think I get a lot and I think people want to hear about a lot, which is, can landlords charge the cost of repairs back to a tenant? And how do you manage through that situation?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think a key point in figuring that out, right? What's happening? Can I charge them?
Yeah.
Is asking the tenant questions. How did this happen? When?
Right.
Right. So a couple of things around that. You can determine if something they did caused it. The other piece would be if they had an issue and they didn't report it to you in a timely fashion and it got worse.
Right.
That's where, again, they have definitely accountability there. I've got, you know, example for me of just a simple thing that I charge for, right? Tenant called or text me. We have a great relationship over text.
Yeah.
Hey, the downstairs shower, we turn it on and hardly anything comes out of the shower head. I dispatched a plumber. Had it completed within a day.
Yeah.
And the plumber called me and said, yeah, they had one of those charcoal filters in their shower head to filter the water that's coming through. And that had never been changed and clogged.
Yeah. And you didn't provide them the charcoal filter, right?
Correct.
Right.
Correct. It was the head they put on.
Right.
So I was able to charge them back. I think a couple more things. I hope everyone has a lease out there.
Yeah.
Right? I hope we're not renting without documentation, without a formal lease.
We actually talked about that on the previous podcast in this series around the importance of a written lease and not a verbal lease and not a napkin lease and not a one-page lease, but a good, robust lease. So we're hoping everyone takes the advice and has that written lease, yes.
Yeah. So look at the lease language. If you're not sure if that's something that's their responsibility, lease often calls that out. And I think, too, check state law, right?
Right.
State law often outlines what is owner and tenant responsibilities for maintaining the property or paying for repairs.
Hmm. Makes sense. Great advice, Brock. Thanks for coming on. The question I have to ask everybody really usually revolves around, hey, are you going to be buying some single-family rentals in the future? But you already are a property investor. You own a single-family rental property. I don't know how long you've had it for, but you've been doing it for a little while. And so, what was the motivation for you to get into having a real estate investment?
Well, we moved. In my situation, I got promoted and we ended up moving. And initially, I had my parents move in.
Okay.
Because they were looking to get out of their apartment. They went from a house to an apartment.
Yep.
My dad hated it.
Right.
So he said, hey, how about if we just move in? So that's how that started. They eventually moved, and I had a decent amount of equity build up.
Yeah.
And I felt like this is a good vehicle to continue to pay off that mortgage.
Yeah.
You know, and really set me up for the future for retirement. So, yeah, I've been doing that for quite a few years and found some great tenants that have been there for over 2 years now, and I don't see them moving. So it's
That's
been
awesome.
A great experience.
So it was accidental for you a little bit, but you've had a good experience with it, and you're starting to see the benefits, and that's great. Happy to hear that. Thanks for being on, Brock. We really appreciate it. Maintenance is such a big topic, so I'm glad we could get a podcast episode out about great tips and tricks for maintenance. There's probably so much more we could talk about, so maybe we'll have you back one day. If you enjoyed this podcast, you're listening or you're watching, please support us by subscribing to the podcast. Like it, comment, share it with your friends, leave comments. That's how we can work our way up and spread the message. So we really appreciate your support of the podcast. And if you're looking for help with real estate investments or making your real estate investment plan, please check us out at renterswarehouse.com. There you can play with our research center, learn a little bit about what's going on, build a fantasy portfolio. Better yet, we can connect you with one of our local advisors in your market that can help you reach out to you right away. Leave questions for the podcast on the website as well. We'll address them in future episodes. So thanks again for checking us out. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time for episode number 5.
You've been listening to the Rent Estate Podcast with your host, Kevin Ortner. If you enjoyed today's show, head over to rentestate.com for a free rental property analysis and learn how you can list, invest, and rent all under one roof.